Today's episode of the Meet & Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Today we're speaking to Ricky from Slim Rick's, who's got some fantastic woods, but he'll talk about that and a number of other things afterwards. Without much further ado, here's Ricky. Hi, Rick. For anyone who doesn't know who you are, please do introduce yourself.
Right, so I'm Ricky. I'm the person behind Slim Rick's Smokehouse. Producer of alcohol infused chunks for smoking meat, basically, private event caterer, also do a new range of other chunks for smoking meat, other fruit woods, hardwoods, and getting into other markets. That's predominantly me, kind of barbecue page, barbecue enthusiast, love cooking with fire, and that's pretty much me, man.
So where did your business start? Were you involved with wood? That's a weird thing to say. Are you involved with wood? Have you got wood, Ricky?
No, at the Altons event, there's a few people talking about my plum and wood combination. There was a few innuendos thrown out there, I've always cooked. I love cooking, and probably going back, got to be over 10, 11 years ago, I decided to try and smoke. It was in our little flat that we had in North London. Mm-hmm. I decided to try and smoke a brisket using the worst quality brisket and like bits of kindling, basically. It wasn't probably the correct stuff to be using, but it came out tasting like smoke, but it was pretty inedible. My wife liked it, but it was not great. And ever since then, it was just kind of experimenting, and then lockdown happened, as with a lot of people, lockdown happened, and unfortunately, because of myself, we had to go into shielding. So we was complete lockdown, wasn't allowed out of the house. We was here for like 14 months. It was kind of, luckily we had a good summer, I picked up a smoker off a Facebook marketplace, an offset smoker, for the guy wanted 50 quid. I knocked him down to 30. And went and picked it up and just started experimenting, just while I had the time on my hands, and found it hard to get hold of good quality wood.
Yeah.
We was getting stuff that was kind of part seasoned, getting stuff that was still wet, and I just kind of made it my sort of venture to try and get hold of good quality wood. And once I did, I started, I've got an investment from my mother-in-law. That's kind of where it started being born from, really. Just started a little side hustle and kind of, gathered momentum, really. Thanks to everyone that's like in the community has been purchasing the products, without them, it wouldn't be as good as it is now. But mm-hmm. But that's kind of where it has spawned from. And it's been a long road, though. It's a lot of grafting.
I'd love you to tell us more about wood without, again, sounding like sort of innuendo. But we speak to a lot of people who cook with it, and they talk about one or two different flavor profiles and things. But you've got to be an expert on it. So, what wood do you have? What do you recommend people use? What are tricks that people can get from them?
Yeah, basically, my initial product was the alcohol infused. Mm-hmm. They're basically cask chunks. I would source different alcohol casks. I'd cut the bands off, sand all the impurities off the outside edge of them, cut them down into chunks. And because, you know, believe it or not, like these barrels, they've been sitting for maybe 25, 30 years, and they have steel bands that run around them. Mm-hmm. And these steel bands leave like a rust residue on the outside of the barrel, not to mention all the kind of grime and stuff that you will get on a barrel from 30 years of sitting in warehouses and stuff. So I would sand all that off.
Imagine the taste if you didn't.
You know, people say you can't, because I'm not gonna say names or anything, but there's other people supplying this stuff, and it's still got the grime and stuff on the outside. And if you put them next to each other, you can definitely taste the difference. You might not be able to on something that's a bit stronger flavored, like beef, if you had a strong rub on it. But especially if you're doing something like chicken or fish, you can definitely taste there's a definite difference with it. I know because I tested it, and because if I didn't have to sand them, I wouldn't.
Yeah, because why would you? Amount of time and work that must go into doing that.
I don't enjoy doing it. It's actually quite backbreaking. But the flavor profile for the extra time that it takes to do that, it's a no brainer for me. I started getting into these casks and then finding out about the different charring levels that they do on the insides for the alcohol that's inside them, you know, what sort of oils that it releases, and the intensity of the flavors depending on the intensity of the charring, the different breeds of, because they're all oak casks, but you get different breeds. You'll have white, if it's bourbon, it has to be a white American oak tree. You can't be using European oak because it doesn't classify as a bourbon. It has to be charred to what they call Gator grade, which is charring level 4, I think it was. And that releases chemicals like vanillin, which is, you know, it's very similar to vanilla, which gives the bourbon that sweet taste. Mm-hmm. But it's all these different, snippets of information that you're gathering. You know, I went to a bourbon tasting event where I learned a lot of stuff about cask production. I learned that, you know, American white oak was 20% denser on average than European oak, so it burns longer, it's heavier, you know. And it's just all these little tiny bits of information that you get as you're going along on your journey.
With plum, I've never seen plum wood. I've never heard anyone talk about smoking with plum wood before. And I did notice because we were both at the Alton's event, the bags of plum wood that you've got there. Obviously, cherry's quite a sweet flavour. Do you still get that sweetness with plum, or is it more of a deeper, richer flavour?
Well, plum is it is similar to cherry, but it's a lot... it is stronger because I when I smoked with it, I was surprised about the strength of the flavor of it. Like, you know, cherry is sweet, but it's quite mild. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely got a more potent smokiness to it, but it's not on the levels of kind of oak. It's not up there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, and it's, yeah, I would say it's kind of it's fairly less than oak, but it's stronger than cherry in the smokiness flavor, and it's more of a slightly more earthy tone as opposed to the sweet tone from cherry. It's an ever so slightly more earthy tone, but still, you know, it's tasty. You've got to try to marry it to what your dish is, you know, whatever flavor profile you're trying to achieve. That's the sort of, you know, the flavor that plum gives out is slightly more kind of earthy, but still with the sweet undertones. You know,
I can imagine something like duck. You know, like you go to a Chinese and you have duck and plum sauce type scenario. Yeah. I can imagine a duck smoked with plum
would be tasty.
yeah, exactly. It must be quite a nice flavor combination there.
Yeah, because duck. I mean, duck has obviously got the strong flavor profile of its on its own, so it's I probably wouldn't use it on something like chicken, but I probably wouldn't use it on beef. It's not possibly not strong enough for beef, but I don't know. I mean, it's, it depends what sort of you know, flavor profile you're going for, because some people prefer a slightly less. I mean, some people like cherry on beef. I mean, I don't mind cherry on beef. You know, I think a cherry is a good all rounder. To be fair, you can use it on pretty much everything. So, you know, it's, you try to give people your opinion, but your opinion is just that. Everyone's flavors are different. Everyone likes tasting different things. You know, I've gone to Meatopia 2 years running with, like, you know, with friends and stuff, and everyone likes a different dish more than, you know, we all like different things. So, you know, you can give your opinion, but that is all it is.
I imagine, because I'm quite into whiskey, and I've been on a few different, like, whiskey tasting stuff and things, and there's a lot of crazy science that goes into it quickly that you'd never have any idea of. Like, for example, talking about things like what they call the Angel's Measure, which is when you age it over a period of time, the volume of fluid actually gets less and less and less, and they call it the Angel's Measure. But they say that it can be different with every drink, and even just at different years. Do things like that also make a difference to what the wood ends up being like if you're using it to smoke?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, dependent on, I mean, let's say for some examples, like, we use red wine would be one of the flavors that I've got, which have been, they've kind of been like flash aged in a oak cask just to get a bit of flavor. Some of them do it with a charred inside, some without. But they're, you know, you'll notice that the flavor profile, like the smell, the pungency that you get from those, because they've only been in there for a very short period of time, is nowhere near as strong as, like, say, you know, I had these giant barrels that I got from the Glenlivet distillery. I mean, these were like, they're about as tall as my wife. They're about, there was just over 5 foot tall. They're quite substantial casks, they were, and I had two of them, and but when I cracked those open, they just smelled amazing. You know, and that is from something that's been sat there with that product in for like 20 years, you know, and then you crack that open afterwards, and it's just, you know, you can see the layers of it when you look at its side profile. You can see that how far it's impregnated the wood, as opposed to something that's, you know, sat in there for a very short period of time. But it's funny that you mentioned the Angel's Share, because you also there's a guy that I talked to on Instagram who's his name's Jay Bradley. He actually sells the world's most expensive single grain malt Irish whiskey.
Right.
It was something like €1.3 million or something. It came with a Fabergé egg and a watch that had been done by Fabergé. I mean, this thing was just unbelievable. But you get the Angel's Share, and he does a range called the Devil's Cut, which is like, you know, the strong stuff that you think is at the bottom, you know, stuff that evaporates. It's the other stuff. but even stuff like that, you know, because of this, like, you know, trying to get hold of barrels from reputable distilleries and stuff like that, you know, I started chatting to this guy, and it, you know, we messaged each other on Instagram. I sent him a box of I'd done like a variety box for Christmas, where you had like the brandy, I think you had brandy, red wine, and and bourbon in there. And so I sent him a box of that, and, you know, it's just for Christmas. And, you know, it's like this stuff that you get from doing things like this. You start talking to people on all sorts of different levels, you know. It's been quite a journey to be there.
I mean, it sounds like you're having a blast at the same time. You know, you're learning all this stuff whilst building a business and meeting all the, you know, people from all walks of life as well.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I generally try to make it a rule that if I'm supplying someone for the first time, I'll go up and see them. So the first delivery, I'll do it by hand. And just so you can, you know, meet the people, you get to see more people in the community, and it's about putting a face to the name rather than just, here you go, there's your DHL order, there's your bill for it. You know,
yeah,
it's you know, I've been, so that's got me around the country a little bit. I've been, you know, up to Preston, over to, you know, different places in Oxford and Hertfordshire, and, you know, just, yeah, all over the shop, really. Which is nice. It's nice getting out and about and, you know, seeing these other shops, seeing their displays, seeing the effort that everyone else is putting in.
Mm. And what was your favourite product, like, that you offer? Did you have one that's favourite to you, or, like, people seem to be buying the most?
Well, people, to be honest, like, the bourbon chunks, just, they've been, you know, a winner all round. The bourbon ones have always sold well, which is surprising because, like, you know, you have got the likes of kind of Jack Daniel's whiskey chips that you can buy off the shelf in, you know, quite a few places. And the fact that, you know, my bourbon chunks were doing so well, I thought it's actually quite nice to, you know, see the support and stuff from everyone in the community to show that they were kind of, you know, flying off the shelf. I mean, I've done the limited edition range of the brandy, which is probably one of my favourites, to be honest. They smelled really nice, the brandy chunks. And, you know, they were quite thick. Again, they was off a fairly large cask that I got. So they were quite substantially thicker than a normal chunk. And so, they, you know, nice burn time. And, you know, they were probably one of my favourite ones. Probably not my favourite ones to package, but definitely one of my favourite ones to use. But yeah, I mean, I use all my products all the time, just because I've got an unlimited supply of them, I guess. I like using other people's products, man, as well. Mm. You know, because, like, you get people supporting you, and you know, you go out and buy other people's stuff. You know, just to see, you know, you test the waters and see what stuff other people are producing. Everyone's, the market is so huge. There's a spot in there for everyone.
Yeah.
You know.
Just sort of quickly to go back to the kind of, you know, sourcing, you were saying you obviously try and go to reputable distilleries and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you now, is there a certain age of cask that you're trying to, that you know kind of, you've now know that, right, okay, well, after 20 years that's the flavor that I want, or are you quite open to what's available?
To be honest, you're looking at more of the quality of the cask as well, because you could have something that would have, you know, whiskey in for 20 years, but the cask arrives over here and it's in disarray, you know, it might not be in the best condition. And I tend to go for more quality over, and from it has to be from a decent distillery, and I want it to be in a decent condition, because a lot of these times you'll get these casks and they'll still have product in them. You know, they'll still, I've had casks now turn up and they've probably got, you know, maybe an eighth of a cask still with, you know, fairly potent. I wouldn't drink it, yeah. Christ. But it's got fairly potent liquid still left in it. And so that to me is, you know, I don't want anything that's been left, like, I want all the bungs in. I want it to be tight. I want the bands tight. I want it to be so that thing has been sealed, so that all the flavour hasn't had a chance to escape. Because once those things start breaking up, that's when you start losing the flavour. You know, if you've had something that's got alcohol in for anything more than 10 years, which, you know, most whiskies are kind of a minimum 3 to 5 years at least, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, and then going into your kind of later year ones, one, like, you know, you're not gonna lose that much flavor, but you want something that's going to be kind of tight and compact and it's not been broken up and it's in a bad state when you get it. Because once, if it's in a bad state when you get it, when you chop it up and send it out, it's going to be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main thing for me, is to get, like, grade A casks. from reputable distilleries, not necessarily how long the whiskey's been aged in it. It's like I said, it's a 25-year-old barrel is going to be looking a little bit ropey.
So is this now your full-time business, or is this still something that you're kind of doing on the side as well as a full-time job?
No, I'm a cryogenic engineer by trade. So I deal with pretty much the opposite of what I do with barbecuing. I deal with liquefied natural gases, like minus 190 odd degrees Celsius temperatures.
I thought you were going to say you were growing the trees.
No. It's like, yeah, you ever watch Futurama where they freeze fry and send them to the future? That's kind of that's my day to day job. This is a sideline. It's pretty polar opposites, really.
It sounds interesting. I said I don't think I've ever met anyone with that job before.
It's definitely different to dealing with hot fires and barbecue coals and stuff. So but it pays the bills, mate. That's the problem. So yeah. until the business picks up enough that, you know, I might be able to kind of slip away from it. We'll see. That's a few years down the line, I think, that one.
And is that your ultimate goal, to be able to kind of work within the barbecue industry and take your business forward that way?
Yeah, I mean, that would be like that would be exactly what I'd want to do. You know, go to events, have a few people working under me, chopping the chunk. Because to be honest, man, I don't want to be chopping chunks for the rest of my life. I want to try and get to a stage where I can like get someone else to do it for me. I'm not getting any younger.
Is that something that you would want to continue to do, a handmade process, or is there machinery, I'm assuming, to be able to do that, or do you prefer that kind of made with love type process?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to be honest, I don't know really, because the let's say the barrel chunks, for one, they've got a curved profile on them. You know, I'm not sure how. I mean, I'm sure there is probably a machine that can do it. It probably costs an absolute fortune. But because when you're trying to cut that into a chunk, because it's got the curved profile, it's not like a straight. You're trying to cut chunks from a straight piece of wood. You've got to follow that curve as you're cutting it. Yeah. So it's not as easy as people kind of first perceive, I guess. If I could, I would be the one that goes out, selects the barrels, and then gets someone else to do it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. So, just out of interest, we've spoken, you know, about the business. I'm interested to know a little bit more about your personal journey into barbecue. You mentioned right at the start that you love cooking. You've always loved to cook. So just tell us a bit about your kind of barbecue journey personally.
Yeah, I mean, like, so when lockdown happened, like I mentioned, we went into shielding, I started buying this, like, I bought the offset smoker. I had like a little kettle barbecue that I got from B&Q, and I started doing some cooks on it, and started making some fairly tasty food. And then obviously, like, my wife was she was into Instagram, she was building her page, and then she was start an Instagram page, there's a massive community, and I thought I'll start it. And then a few competitions come along, and you're like, okay, maybe I went to a competition, and then okay, I'm getting further in the competition. I've got to the quarterfinals in that one. Okay, well, that's where I left off on that one. And then that was on the there was a Globaltic family one where I got to the quarterfinal quarterfinals, I think it was, on that one. And then you enter other ones and you win one, and then you're like, okay, maybe I could do something. And then it's just like And then it just progressed and progressed and progressed. And then before you know it, I've bought a, you know, I've got a Savage fire cage. I've got a little Komodo Joe Jr. I've got, I mean, I must have 7 barbecues now. You know, I've got the guys at Drumbecue based in Greenwich who, don't know if you've, have you guys ever been to Meatopia?
Yeah, last year.
So all the drum barbecues that are behind the stalls were all Drumbecue barbecues.
Right.
And they're a massive brand. They're based in Greenwich in London. And they sent me one of their reverse flow cabinet smokers. I mean, the thing's an absolute beast. It's like about 600 kilos.
Jesus.
But yeah, there was just like, you know, yeah, it's a monster. But yeah, it's just like to, you know, I was chatting to them at Meatopia. They was, I would like to, like, you know, work with you and try this and try, you know, just to try and help everyone grow, essentially. Like, they're helping me grow. I'll by promote me, I'll promote them. And then, you know, we had these, these guys from Poland called Bulniak Smokers. They're sponsoring Smoke and Fire this year.
Okay.
Myself and a guy that, you know, I do private events and catering with a guy that I grew up with in school.
Mm-hmm.
He's an avid barbecuer as well. You know, we kind of reconnected again, and like, we've gone through this kind of private catering events stuff that we do together. And, you know, and now both of us are doing, we're going to be doing demo cooking for this Polish smoker company for, we've got 5 events in the UK, possibly 1 in Poland.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's definitely, it's gone from like, from what it was, when was the first lockdown?
2020.
Yeah. March 2020. Yeah. So in the last 3 years, it's just exploded, man. You know? And I mean, you've got to put in some hours though, man, you know, to get to where you are. But it's like, you know, to try, like, you're talking to people in the community, and it's just, it's been a real supportive network of people, you know. And it's a great thing that's been spawned out of this lockdown, man. People have made these, like, these places that they can entertain at home. You know, the price of everything's gone up, so people are more inclined to be entertaining at home. And this is the market that we've entered, you know. This is like, people are now, you know, rather than going out to dinner with friends, you know, I was speaking to one of my colleagues the other day. He said he went out for fish and chips with his family. It cost him like 60, 70 quid just for a couple of fish and chips. And he was just like, you know, yeah, be more inclined to have people over at his house to, you know, cook and, you know, entertain there, because it's cheaper. And, you know, people have set up these kind of, you know, these outdoor kitchens, and, you know, some of the things I see on Instagram are just insane. Yeah,
that cost there about going out, it's mad, isn't it? I even find with taking the family to like McDonald's now is it, like, silly expensive compared to, I mean, perhaps because the kids are getting older and they don't have Happy Meals anymore, but you're spending over 20 quid on just some McDonald's. It's a smash burger and a bit of some chips that you could do for 3 or 4 quid at home.
Yeah, exactly.
And much better as well, is the other side of that, yeah. You know? And you think, like, some of the big cuts of meat as well, imagine how many people you could feed for 60 quid.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah. You could, when you were just saying that about, you could make something at home and it tastes a lot better than that you purchase out. Like, I mean, I've kind of been annoying to take out now. My wife gets annoyed with it. Like, if we go out somewhere, because I sit there and eat something, I'm like, no, I can't believe I'm paying 15 quid for this. Yeah. Because it's just like, I could, you know, you can make something better at home yourself, but it's just, I think I've, you know, I don't think she likes the fact that I'm getting a bit of a food stuff, I think.
There's literally nothing wrong with that. If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area, with styles and options to suit every budget, and you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk. So just talk to us a little bit more about the private catering side of things. So what are you kind of doing, like weddings, events and things like that? And what kind of things are you cooking?
Yeah, we do. We've done weddings, folk festivals. You know, we've done a Leon C folk festival. We've done a Saturday and Sunday there last year. And we sold roughly 450 burgers in 2 days. We could have done more. We sold out early doors both days. We just didn't realize how busy it was. So but you know, you go to a lot of these events and they're clued up now. They don't have 10 people doing burgers. They'll have one person doing burgers, one person doing pulled pork, one person doing tacos. So they'll try to even the market out. Yeah. You know, which makes it fair for everyone, which is it's nice. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice buyer. No one's competing directly with each other. You know, we've done weddings, we've done birthday parties in people's gardens. You know, I'm in talks with people, hopefully to do Pride this year in Essex.
Wow.
So that should be quite a big event. And we're kind of leaning more towards, trying to keep on the corporate side, because festivals can be a bit hit and miss. You know, it's a bit, you know, you put, there's risk involved in that. When you start doing corporate events and, you know, you give a price and that's what you're charging, that's, you know, it's there's no risk involved, you know, or very little. So that's kind of the direction we're trying to steer towards now. We still do the big festivals when we can get them, but that's the direction we're trying to go now, just because it's, you know, we've done the festivals, we've done the risky bits, we're just kind of like, right now we've got a bit of a name, we're trying to steer down the corporate side of things and the weddings and the, you know, the private events, because, you know, that's where you're, that's where it makes life easier. You know how many people you're doing, you know what times you're serving from and to, you know, and it's just makes life, because it's very stressful doing festivals, man.
I can imagine. So what are you I'm assuming you're not taking your 600 kilo cabinet with you every time you go to a festival. So
no, of course not.
what are you normally cooking on when you do cater?
Right, so generally speaking, it's we were getting these, like there's a butcher over near like Langdon sort of way in Essex. And he was getting this like award winning pork mince and making them into foot long sausages. So we was getting those and smoking those, doing kind of like foot long dirty dogs. We was using, so my friend that I do it with, he's got an Oklahoma Joe. So we was using that. That's still a heavy piece of kit, though. might not be 500 kilos, but it's still heavy. So we take that to events. We take my fire cage, Savage fire cage, and a barrel barbecue that I built with a welder that I got from the middle of Lidl.
Nice.
Yeah, dude, you can get everything from Lidl. So I'm a firm favourite of Lidl. but yeah, that's what we take. And we generally tend to do burgers, dirty dogs, pulled pork. But, you know, we've done Christmas fairs where we've had tomahawk steaks. We've had sirloin. Like we've had full strip loin joints, and you know we do the whole joint over fire, and then slice it, put it in buns, bit of horseradish, you know, mustard vinaigrette, bit of rocket, yeah. Oh, it's good, done. Even if I play
today myself, I'm hungry.
Yeah, I don't get to eat any of it though. That's the problem.
I suppose so. So. One of the things that we hold quite dear on the podcast is our barbecue fails. So some of the things that some of the cooks or even during the business, perhaps that hasn't gone so well, Ricky. So have you got some stories for us, perhaps when you were catering that, you know, some things that haven't gone so well?
To be honest, the catering side of things have gone pretty well, to be like, you know, because the guy that I do them with, he studied catering in school, college. So he's fairly clued up, and together, you know, we kind of work quite well together, and we haven't really, I mean, touch wood, we haven't come up against anything yet. But you know, obviously personal fails, Christ, I don't even know where to begin. You know, there's been plenty, you know, but that's all part and parcel of it. You know, I mean, I've had stuff that I've practically made that has been inedible. But, you know, if I didn't make that stuff, then I wouldn't have learned from it. You know, I remember once I used a smoker and didn't test to make sure that the gauge was working properly. Just took it for, you know, fact. I thought, okay, it's working properly. Then about 2 hours into my cook, I decided to put the digital gauge in there, found out that the analog gauge was about 90 degrees Fahrenheit out. So where I thought I was running about 250 Fahrenheit, it was more like 350 Fahrenheit. And, because after 2 hours, I opened it up and I was just like, well, everything looks a bit more cooked than it should do. but, you know, that stuff happens, man. It's... You've got to be on it. You've got to make sure that you test. If you're going to do a big smoke, you test those gauges. You put your digital ones in there. You make sure they're calibrated, you know. And it's all stuff. Without doing the mistakes, you wouldn't think to do it. You know, you'd take it for gospel that the little gauge on top of your Weber was reading the right temperature, but it don't always.
Yeah. No, not at all.
It's but yeah, that's. I mean, that's probably. That one where it was kind of 90 degrees out, that was kind of a big fail because I had quite a bit of meat in there at the time. And it was, I managed to kind of rescue it. You know, if anyone's kind of ruined meat in the smoker, you know that if you kind of vacuum seal it with enough, you put like a little splash of apple cider vinegar in there, then vacuum seal it once it's been shredded. And then you can boil it. Once, like, you know, when you want to warm it through and then add it to something that's kind of very saucy, like a pasta or a, you know, a shepherd's pie, like anything that's kind of got a rich sauce with it that you can kind of let it just simmer in there and kind of break it down a bit. You know, I mean, I've had beef cheeks that I thought I could throw through a window because they were just they were so bad. But You can still rescue them though. It's surprising, you know. If you know, you can get a few tricks where I've had like really bad beef cheeks, but and then I'll just like leave them in a pool of brine or something, and leave them at a low heat, and they just break down even further. You know, you can rescue things. So
yeah,
but you can also murder things. So,
really. Yeah. The temperature gauge thing is so, I can imagine, so frustrating. I mean, you're in Essex, I'm in Essex too, and, you know, it's what, 2-3 degrees at the minute. If I go and look out on one of my smokers, it will say it's 80 degrees. It's that far out. It's not even on, and it's still saying it's 80 degrees while it's 2 degrees outside. And you're right, it is just about that process, isn't it? Checking to make sure that your equipment's ready before you start putting a load of meat on.
Yeah, it's actually like the guy that made it so that, like, Smoking Elk. Don't know if you guys follow him at all. Yeah. He's because I remember watching a video of him calibrating his gauges on his Komodo, like showing the removal of it and, like, you know, basically just adding it to boiling water and making sure it's reading near 100 degrees, you know, it's like 100 degrees Celsius and whatever that is in Fahrenheit. I can't remember, two something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 220.
But he I mean, it's a really easy 5-minute job. And to do that and save yourself ruining, you know, 70, 80 quid's worth of meat. If you've got, I mean, some of these like full pack of briskets, you're talking, talking big money that you could be ruining without realizing it. So it's either test your gauges or make sure you've got a second one.
So sometimes it's not even that. It's understanding the barbecue, because if you've got like quite a large barbecue or like the larger Kamados, where the gauge is reading the temperature, it will be much hotter further down. Or there's different sweet spots. It's understanding that as well if you're doing a long, long cook and getting to know your kit. And the best way you can do that is proper kind of collaboration and make sure everything's calibrated properly, but also cooking on them regularly. And getting a feel and understanding them. Is that difficult to do with 7 barbecues?
Well, it's like, to be honest, I've got that many barbecues, but they all have their own functions. I know it sounds like, you know, you think you can do... I mean, I think I'm just spoiled, to be fair. I mean, you can't, like, I was blown away with Komodo Joe when I got it. My wife and my mother-in-law bought it for me for my birthday last year. And I was literally blown away with how those things are so consistent and easy to cook on. I mean, I've done a pork belly on it, and I just literally dialed the temperature in and I just left the lid closed. I didn't spritz it, I didn't do anything, and I left it for like 4 hours, 4.5 hours, and it came out amazing. I've got a Weber, the Master Touch, which is kind of the one that I use probably most frequently, because it's good all rounder. You know, I've got a Borgnyak cabinet smoker, which I use when I've kind of not really got the time to like man the smoker. You know, that's kind of like it's a wood chip feeding electric smoker. It's really good quality, but it's like one that you can just kind of chuck something in there for a couple of hours, 3-4 hours, and just set and forget it. You know the fire cage is obviously probably one of my favorite things to cook on, because it's just, you know, it's just a bit of theater, man, and it's a lot of fun. You know, I get the kids involved. I get, you know, we had spark, you know, I was doing a chicken shawarma on it, and I've got the kids lighting sparklers off of it, and you know, it's a good bit of theater, a good bit of fun. And I've got a master built cabinet smoker, the electric, it's an electric coal smoker, the big cabinet. Yeah. So that doesn't really get used at all anymore. Now that I've got the one from Drumbecue, it doesn't get used at all really. But it's just kind of sat there. I've got one called an Aquaferno, which I don't think many people have heard of.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's
the name rings a bell, but
so it's aimed at the kind of the backpacking, traveling people, like community. It's fits in a backpack, but it kind of telescopes out into kind of the same sort of size as a if you can imagine like the drum barbecues when they're stood up, kind of like the UDF, the ugly drum smokers. But it's telescopic, so the bottom one's smaller, then the middle one's slightly bigger, the top one's slightly bigger than the middle one. But this thing does everything. It's got a pizza stone, battery-powered rotisserie. It's got little hooks on it to hang your clothes on if you've been camping, to dry them out with a fire in there. It's got all sorts on it.
Oh, wow.
It's just like, it's actually a really cool piece of kit, but... but I only use it at the moment as a pizza oven. So, because that's the only thing that I haven't got in my arsenal is a pizza oven. So that's what that gets used for. But yeah, it's just that's kind of what I cook on. And like I said, the Savage fire cage is definitely my favourite at the moment, just because it's just so much fun to cook. the drumbecue one is great, but I mean that you cook like you're cooking volume in that because it's so big. Sorry, my wife's just passing me a drink.
That's all right.
Nice.
But yeah, that's about it with what I cook on, guys.
Nice. I think what would be good then, if we've been talking about barbecues, you've been talking about some of the things that you've been cooking, it'd be quite good to go on to our barbecue bingo challenge. Barbecue bingo is brought to you by Lumberjack Food Company, your ticket to Flavor Town.
Yep.
So if I share my screen.
So technical, yeah, but on a phone, is that readable?
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, Christ. Yeah.
So this is the high-tech wheel that we were talking to you about. Millions of pounds we've spent on this. okay, so there's a load of ingredients. A lot of these have been left by previous guests. There's one on there called My Signature Dish. So if that lands on that, we'd like you to cook your signature dish. What are you best known for, Ricky?
Oh, I'd probably say my favourite to cook is either beef short ribs or beef cheek, man. Probably beef short ribs are my favourite.
Good choice. I love beef shorties. They're one of my favourite things to cook as well.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Okay, so if I give this a spin, and just while it's spinning, and we'd like you to think of an ingredient you could leave for hopefully our next guest to pick out. So if you've got something in mind,
who left liver and beef tongue? It's just wrong.
I've already forgotten who left beef tongue. It was recently as well.
It weren't Dave Spice Punch, was it?
No, it was the guys from Smoky Oak Barbecue. You know, the big offset smokers.
Yeah,
it was those guys that left that, and Dave. They found it hilarious.
Dave left. It was ice cream, wasn't it? But it's already it was maple ice cream. That's what it was. But that's already gone. Someone's got the pleasure of doing that, and because it was Dave as well, he was like, "Yeah, so I make it using the barbecue." I was like, "I mean, we'll see what people do, but they're probably going to use it as an ingredient rather than trying to think of how to make ice cream with a barbecue." Dave, if I'm honest. But you know, speak to geniuses and they'll come up with crazy things, right?
Yeah.
Right, let's give it a go, see what comes out.
I'm hoping beef tongue now, because your reaction.
Oh, so nearly liver. Oh,
celeriac.
That's not a bad one.
That's not a bad one at all. That's one you can definitely low and slow.
Yeah.
Where's
your brain going with that?
The celeriac puree written all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
It's celeriac puree, isn't it? That's kind of... With my MasterChef hat on, that's what I can... that's definitely what I've got in mind for that one. Celeriac puree.
A bit of beef cheeks on the side, why not?
Yeah, duck could go nice to that, though. Duck with celeriac puree.
What ingredient are you going to leave? Are you going to do something nice, or are you going to try and stitch someone up?
So we've got one person's left a fruit on there, mango. Right. I think just because I've seen them done very well, I'm going to put a pineapple on there.
Oh, yeah. They're so nice if you just put them in the coals and let them kind of burn up and almost feels like it ferments as well. Beautiful thing.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm going to add to that one. Get some sweet stuff on there.
Awesome.
I would have loved it if you'd gone, I think maybe, what if we said like plum wood?
No, you could put some offal or something like that on it. That's like, That'd be testing someone.
Definitely. So is there anything, Ricky, that we haven't kind of spoken about that, about barbecue or the community or anything for that matter that you wanted to kind of have a chat with us about that we haven't spoken about so far?
Not really, man. I'm just thinking like about, you know, just the sort of people that are involved in the barbecue community and just how, you know, how supportive they are towards everyone. You know, it's like there's people out there that do more for you than, you know, some of your people closely around you do. Like, you know, there's some decent people in the barbecue community. And it's just nice to be a part of it. You know, nice to get messages from people, you know, and, you know, it's a nice thing that's happened. It does feel like, you know, it's kind of been perpetuated from this lockdown that, you know, that happened a few years ago. I mean, it seems to have just grown exponentially, and there's been so many small businesses that have come out of it, you know, and being able to work with them, being like, you know, work with other people in the community, work with even people outside the community. Like there's people that have come into this community with doing work experience in other sides of things and been able to adapt it to being used in this side of things. Like it's just been, you know, it's been really good, man. It's been nice to be a part of everyone's journey, and you know, just like watching them all as well, you know, like being tagged in people's posts, seeing what people are doing with your stuff. It's just makes you feel good. So it's a good thing to be a part of, man.
Awesome. Dan, is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
The last thing that I wanted to ask you, and we haven't really asked anyone else this, but maybe we should. You talk about the community and how special it is, and people listening are often looking for inspiration. If there's one Instagram page that you'd suggest people go look at for inspiration, what would it be?
That's a tough one. I couldn't even answer that.
You know, there's so many people out there that you just kind of, you watch their stuff, and it's, you know, there's definitely two people that I would say that I look at their stuff and it's still kind of, you know, I'm amazed at the stuff that they do on there. And there's, well, actually, you know,
reel them off.
So I would say, probably my top one would be Aston from Smoking Maple Meats. Just because, I mean, I've met Aston a few times. I've met his mum and dad, and I see the stuff that he's doing at his age. I know everyone says about the stuff he's doing at his age, but I just think about when I was his age, and I was no way near as focused as he is. And the stuff that he's churning out, the you know, the opportunities that he's getting, and he is just eating it up, and he's just going for it. And yeah, I just wish, like, the some of the food that he's churning out is just unreal. And I just think, like, for you know, not just for his age, for anyone, that is an achievement. So I think he's definitely one of the pages that I like to, you know, I like to keep an eye on. Then it would be Dave Spice Punch, just because the guy, just the butchery skills that he's acquired. I mean, I was lucky enough to go to Dave's house, and we had a little bit of a cook up there, and he does just, you know, who has a dry ager, you know, it's just some of the stuff he does is just crazy, man. When I see him with artists and the, you know, Mr. Russell Davis and that, and they're doing these big cooks, like, you know, when they cooked like a whole pig, you know, over this pit that they built in artist's back garden. And you just think, like, you know, these guys are doing some big stuff, you know, very entertaining to watch. And yeah, so they're probably like, they would probably be my top two ones that I like I really like watching. And then the other ones would be, I like Ollie Eats.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like his new, like he's doing a lot of bushcraft stuff.
Yeah.
Doing stuff out in the wild. He's done some big cooks. I really like the format of his page. Really quiet. And met him a few times. Really nice guy. Very supportive. And, you know, it's just you can feel the genuineness coming across on the page, you know, yeah. Which is, it's something that kind of draws you in. It's a nice thing to have. And this is probably only because I'm a little bit jealous of the smoker he's just acquired, but you got Flames Barbecue Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff he's been cooking on his new smoker is just, you know, it's just nice to fly. I watched him talking to the guys about getting his smoker. Then the smoker came, and then it was like the whole journey. And now he's knocking out some really, really good stuff on his smoker. Just, it's a very interesting account to watch. You know, he was, I think he had a TikTok video that's got like nearly a million views on.
Christ.
Yeah. He's got some really, really cool stuff that he's been doing on it. But, and again, like, you know, he was at the Alton's launch night. And nice guys, like, you know, like nice to talk to. And yeah, I'm just jealous of his smoker, I think. I was just like watching him. But they're accounts that, you know, they always come top of my feeds because, you know, you'll find yourself engaging, this stuff looks good. Even likes of like T-Bone Marmaduke, man. You know, very entertaining page to watch.
Yeah.
You know, such a nice fella as well. Met him at Sizzlefest and, you know, was so nice to talk to. And I mean, he was a little bit flustered. He'd just done the hot wing challenge and won it. But, but look, constant support as well, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, in a lot of contact with him on the messages and stuff and just, yeah, nice people, man. You know, even like the guys, you know, the Alton guys always got a soft spot for Jay and the team, you know, because again, like doing so much for the community. Like you look at the events that they put on there, you know, the stuff that he posts up, you know, there's so many accounts there. I can't even name one. You know, it's like,
instead
of doing four,
and I've done six. But on that point, though, don't forget yourself. Before we finish, one last time, tell everyone how they can find you, what your Instagram page is, where can they buy your stuff?
Right. So, my Instagram is @slim_ricks_smokehouse. They can buy my stuff. Either direct from me, just sending me a DM. I have got a website in the process, but it's been a long time in the process. It's just finding the time to get it up and running. It's nearly there, but it's just taking those final tweaks to get it right. But you can find us on Globaltic's website. You can find me on Angus and Oink's website. You can find me at Alton's Alfresco Chapel. You can find us at the Outdoor Kitchen Collective. Where was Gibson's Finest Meats? I think that's it at the minute.
People can find it through Google too.
and Google, people can Google it. You know, it's actually the first one that comes out. If you type Slim Ricks, it comes up. Wow. Slim Ricks Podcast. Yeah. So it's that's where we're at the minute. I mean, like I said, we've got big plans for, you know, hopefully going to bring out a range of smaller splits to use for pizza ovens. Nice. Yeah, because they seem, I mean, after the Gosney sort of, you know, what's been going on with that, I mean, that's been absolutely insane watching his page. But yeah, it's like, so trying to see if we can utilize, like, you know, the woods that we're supplying here to try and make something that can be used in those bits of equipment would be great, because they're very popular at the minute, and you know, there's a market out there for you know, high quality kiln dried hardwoods. So hopefully we could do something, but yeah, we'll see. Watch this space.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. It's a shame that we literally missed each other only a week or so ago when in person, but hopefully we get to meet you at some events this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys doing any of the Smoke and Fires, are you? Or?
Possibly. We're definitely doing Sizzle Fest, possibly Smoke and Fire.
Malden, maybe. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Well, I might see you there then.
Sounds good.
All right, guys.
Thanks very much.
Have a great
right,
one.
Thanks for your time, guys. All right, take care. Yeah.
Cheers.
See you later.
Bye. Right.
That's it for another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast. Thanks so much to Ricky for coming on and talking to us about his business. I really wish him the best of luck and can't wait to meet him in person. As ever, we want to hear from you, so get in touch with us through the usual channels at Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast on socials, our website, meetandgreetbarbecuepodcast.com. And until next time, keep on grilling.
Today's episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.